Not only does that mean Joe Patrick is here, but he's in studio. How about that? Live and in living color. Our Falcons insider for his weekly visit here on Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. And Joe, so much to get into, so little time.
There is?
I wish there wasn't, man. I really wish this was just like, yeah, you know, the Falcons won 30-17.
Yeah.
Michael Penix Jr. shined in the defense, and Pierce had a sack, and Walker had, you know, eight pressures. And
He's going to lead the league this year, you know?
Pressures.
Lewis Riddick, his prediction was spot on.
All right. let me start here. After watching what Minnesota did last night, coming back, McCarthy caught fire, defense played much better in the second half, and then watching what we did on Sunday, how do you feel about this game? Did your mood, mindset change about this game at all after taking in both the Falcons and then the Vikings?
It's funny you said that because I actually do have thoughts on kind of the way that I think this game is going to go versus the way that I think lines, like odds makers, are going to have it go. And I'm probably more optimistic than you're going to be wanting to hear from me here, Chris.
I just want the truth, man.
I'm not a believer in J.J. McCarthy at this point. I think Kevin O'Connell did a great job with him last night. I think Kevin O'Connell is the best play caller in the NFL right now. And I think that because that Minnesota Vikings have Kevin O'Connell, he gives them a chance to win basically every single game because what they have on defense in addition to his play calling. But I'm just not impressed with J.J. McCarthy, and I think that this Falcons defense, while, yes, they didn't really get home on a lot of sacks that you would have wanted to see, I think they did show, like, the green shoots that you wanted to see, especially from these young players that can give a young quarterback making his second start in the NFL, like J.J. McCarthy will be, I think they can give him fits and potentially get him to turn the ball over once or twice. That will be great. Now, I think on the other hand, there are some very legitimate concerns with what you saw from the offensive line and how well that's going to be able to improve when you get into a really hostile, maybe the loudest environment in the NFL in Minnesota next week. So,
and the Vikings have a much better defensive front
than
the Bucs.
No doubt.
Right now.
Yeah. And they don't have Vita Vea, but they do have just a lot of dynamic players along that front that are going to cause problems for this team. And so they're going to have to make some adjustments with what they do in the run game, especially, and try to and figure that out. I don't think it's going to get any easier this week, but I just feel like defensively they can, you know, we talked about, you know, this defense maybe was never going to be one that kept points off the board to a great extent, but could at least turn teams over, make some game-changing plays in that respect. And I think that this is a week where we can potentially really see that come to fruition.
How much longer until we get this kicker thing figured out?
Well, hopefully it starts getting figured out this week. I mean, I would be really surprised if Younghoe Koo is kicking for this team in Minnesota. And if John Parker Romo, the new practice squad kicker, who I expect to be elevated onto the active roster to the game day roster on Sunday, if he makes his kicks, he's going to be this team's kicker. Now, whether he actually does that, you know, we have to wait and see. Maybe a little silver lining here is that he has experience kicking in Minnesota, where he kicked for four games last year. It was 11 for 12 for them, and that's where they will obviously be this weekend, but you never know. It's always kind of scary when you have to get in bed with a new kicker, but you know, sometimes you got to get in bed with a new partner every once in a while. You know, things grow stale, things grow old, you know, things start to go awry, and you gotta find that life source again.
Don't tell me that. I just celebrated my 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
Joe. Don't tell me that.
1 year with a great kicker is, you know, things are going great.
Well, the Falcons had that with young
Waku. Right.
And can I
say, it's tough with Koo because and just kicking in general, it's such a psychological hurdle that he has to clear when you start getting into this rut. It's not just about, you know, a kicker's talent and that talent eventually coming through, because you need him to make kicks this week. Like you can't just wait for a kicker to get right. You've got to find that solution. And I think that, you know, that's the problem with signing a kicker, any kicker really, but you know, Younghoe Koo was signed to a multi-year contract, and now that money feels like it's, you know, a little bit down the drain. It's not obviously a ton of money in comparison to other players, but still, this is a team that can use every dollar on the salary cap they can with the mistakes that have been made on that front. So it'll be interesting to see how John Parker Romo gets on. But as long as he can just make the kicks, that's all this team needs. And like, not even anything special. If he can just got to be basically perfect inside of 50 yards, which is pretty standard for an NFL kicker these days.
Just better than what Riley Patterson was at the end of the year.
By
the way, when here's how you knew the situation is what it is. When he spoke to the media and started getting all technical about his kicks and the turf and the placement, you sunk your own battleship there.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And I get it because, like, he's asked why. Like he's asked why and he's trying to give an answer, but still it never looks good. You know, what fans want is some good old-fashioned self-flagellation there. You know, you just got to whip yourself on the back and say, you know, I did a bad job.
Here's my next thing. Really didn't love Zach Robinson's game plan, especially in short yardage. I just thought, why? Like, I was just thinking as these plays were developing, like, first of all, why are you running outside with Bijan Robinson to try to get 1 yard?
Because they can't run inside.
Yeah, but the thing is, but then you take Tyler Allgeier and you try to run him inside and you get stuff. So what did you make of the game plan?
I'm with you, Chris, and I've got the questions lined up ready for him tomorrow. You know, it's funny that the Falcons have been doing media. The coordinators are going at the same time as open locker room. And typically we like to be in open locker room because you want to talk about you want to hear from the players more than anybody else. But tomorrow, I think there's pertinent questions for Zach Robinson. And the thing that frustrates me, Chris, is it's the pistol and shotgun setups in like fourth and one or short, you know, you need inches and you're snapping the ball back 4 yards. And, you know, and that makes it difficult. By the way, it's not just the fact that the ball is going away from the line of scrimmage. It starts with the center. The center has to make an accurate snap to the quarterback. And so if he's doing that, he's not able to fire off as quickly against those big guys up front that he has to move off the spot in order for the team to successfully run up the middle in those situations. And so I think that's why we've seen, you know, several times, like Drew Dahlman, for example, last year, obviously had issues with the snap when they were in shotgun in some of those situations. And I even saw some, obviously none to the extent that Dahlman's were at times last year, but they were not always accurate. And I give the center some leeway. I did play it in high school, so maybe that's one of the reasons why.
Well, but you got your
center
bona fides.
When you're having to snap the ball back like that and fire off the ball and try to move a Vita Vea, it's like you're asking him to do an impossible task.
Well, the Falcons also ask a lot of climbing to the next level, taking on blocks from linebackers, so totally understand what you're saying. Level of concern, Mooney and London.
London, I'm concerned. I think Mooney's going to – I would expect him to return this week, frankly. I mean, we've seen him. He's been practicing now for a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks since he first got back on the grass. And I definitely – you know, he was playing last week. He said that he was not being held back. We obviously can't watch the full practices like we were during training camp. We only see the first 15 minutes. But what I have seen in those 15 minutes, they've been running some drills where they just literally throw bombs to the guys. It's a fun one to watch because the receivers just run 50 yards and Penix throws them a bomb downfield. And Darnell Mooney's running super fast, and you would expect that. You know, it was a shoulder injury. It's not like it was a lower body thing. So
it sounds like a clear for contact.
Exactly. It sounds like that. And he was specifically asked that when he, you know, finally talked to media last week, and he didn't suggest that was part of it, but also I don't know how much you can actually believe a player talking about an injury situation. So, it sounds to me like it's once he's cleared medically, then he's going to be full go, which I would expect this week.
Talking with our insider, Joe Patrick here. Make sure you check out the podcast, Joe Patrick on Football. I know some people are saying no big deal. Some people are saying big deal. One sack total on Baker without the best left tackle in football. To me, you needed more.
You do need more. I thought that when I rewatched the game this morning, and I felt like the rushers, I felt like they actually had more time to get to the quarterback than they're used to. Like, I felt like in Jimmy Lake's system, because they played so much off coverage, they felt like they had to get to the quarterback immediately. And what I saw was Baker Mayfield kind of dropping back and then not having that open guy like he was accustomed to, which was kind of nice. You see him patting the ball a little bit in the pocket, but it felt like the rushers were in such a rush to get to him, they were leaving him some then open avenues to get out of the pocket, and it almost felt like if they had just kind of been a little bit more patient in their rush lane, he was either going to run right into them or the pocket was ultimately going to collapse around them. So it feels to me like there are some positives there to build off of, but it's just you got to kind of get it all in sequence with the defense at the right time. But I thought it was promising showing defensively, Chris. I mean, like, you know, they were able to at least get pressures. I think they were third in the NFL this week in overall pressure rate. You know, Jeff Ulbrich was also bringing blitzes quite frequently, bringing five. But I thought even those blitzes were effective with either Caden Ellis or Divine Diablo coming up through those A-gaps and creating havoc in the middle of the pocket. So I'm actually pretty optimistic with what they showed on that side of the ball.
Well, highlight Diablo. He gets a gold star.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to give myself a gold star, by the way, too, because I said that I felt like he was a player that nobody was talking about, myself included, by the way, because it's hard to really understand, like, when you're watching training camp practice, like, is the linebacker actually doing a good job? Like, it's hard to see the run fits in general. You don't know what the coverages are. It's hard to know whether they're actually doing their job. But just when you look at him, it's like, wow, that guy looks like a great football player. He's like big, long, rangy, strong guy. And then you combine that with the way that Raheem Morris talks about him, not just generally how smart they think he is and all that, but just how impressed that he clearly was with him since he got in, and he showed it. He made some great plays, and he used exactly the kind of tools that we saw, you know, that range to get out in coverage or, you know, put arms up and when he's rushing the passer. I thought it was really good from him.
What did you make of the Rukurororo roughing play? It's kind of tough to diagnose, in my opinion. He needs to hold up at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I said as much, but he also, like, I don't think he was being egregious either. It was tough.
I agree. And, you know, it was interesting that the refs got together and kind of talked about it for a while before they ultimately, I mean, they threw the flag immediately, but then, like, they kind of debated it. And I kind of thought they may have picked it up because when you do start talking about it, I'm sure that they were talking about how light the contact was, but also they were probably thinking, you know, we might get in trouble by the league if we don't, you know, go ahead and call this. So it was obviously very light. And yeah, it's like, you know, nothing that anybody hasn't heard, but you just can't put that in the ref's hands. You got to make sure that that's just not an option for them to call. So it was a pretty brutal penalty in the context.
Before I let you go, what the hell happened on special teams, man?
Exactly. It, like, outside, I know that obviously the missed field goal and everything gets a lot of play, but also Koo missing the touchdown or the touchback zone, whatever, the landing zone. You had a big punt return that led to a Tampa Bay touchdown. That's basically a turnover. It was a 58-yard punt and a 59-yard return. That's a turnover. And you had another, the last drive of the game when the Bucs needed that field goal, and they ultimately do score a touchdown on it, they give up a big kickoff return to the 37-yard line that sets it up. So in the modern NFL, from there, you only need like 30 yards, and then you're in range. And it just put them under pressure. So, yeah, Marquise Williams, I know that, you know, that was been an emphasis for them this offseason, but they got to get that stuff cleaned up.
All right, Joe, next time we talk, I want to be talking about a dub.
I do, too.
I really do. I
think it's winnable. I mean, I think these are winnable games they got coming up.
It is. I just... What J.J. McCarthy showed me in the fourth quarter yesterday are the exact things that happen at the end of Falcons games.
Mm. Yeah,
where
yeah.
They have a lead, mm-hmm. You're winning, mm-hmm. You feel good, and then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, it unravels in the most nightmarish way possible.
Mm-hmm. But Penix is showing that he can kind of pull it out of his butt, too.
And that could be the difference. And I thought it was going to be the difference.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. Should have been the difference.
Because he should have gotten the chance.
Yeah.
And then they should have been able to hopefully win the faceoff, get them marched down the field and score. And that would have been all she wrote. But all right, my friend, appreciate you hopping on in studio. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right. That is Joe Patrick there. Yeah. We'll continue to take your calls on the other side. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. How you feeling about this Vikings game? Better? Worse? About the same? After seeing what they did last night and seeing what the Falcons couldn't do on Sunday afternoon. We'll be back with your calls. Also, what are the five biggest questions after week one? We'll get into that as well. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10 o'clock on 92.9 The Game.